Thank you ever so much, everybody. Thank you so much for just inviting me to kind of share with you. It's the first time I've actually done this with a church, so this is good. So I'm what I'm going to talk about really is, I guess, sort of creation stewardship from the perspective of an Amazonian Peruvian lay pastor, and as much as I've been able to grasp what that is. Which is kind of my job as well, isn't it? To grasp the perspective of the people who I now live amongst. So I'm going to talk about kind of what I teach, how I teach it. And more than anything, I think the learning that I've had through being able to spend time with local people here and to hear from them and to see how they live and see what their kind of their joys and their struggles are. So yeah, since I've been here, yeah, I've done a whole lot of different roles because that's often the nature of mission work. You've kind of got to do what needs to be done. But right from the start, one of the things that I was told I was going to do and which has panned out was I was going to be giving this teaching on creation stewardship. And what I call it now, the module that I teach or the session that I teach, I call it Administración de la Creación. After many years of tweaking it and thinking it, rethinking it and listening to people, it's now called Administración de la Creación, which literally means creation administration. And I love this teaching unit. It's a real challenge it has been a real challenge to write it and to teach it over the years. I think for obvious reasons, one, that I'm not a Peruvian lay pastor farmer. That's not where I've come from. I've come from a very different background. And partly also because the local people here, the local pastors who we're teaching, are not used to an integral approach. So often when the pastors first come and I start talking about creation administration, you know, they get that look and they're like, why are we talking about this at a theological conference? So some of the challenges first have been just about helping people understand why we're going to talk about this topic at a theological conference. And the other thing is that often this topic is talked about here in this context by the conservationists or by environmentalists, and I am an environmentalist by profession, so I'm one of those. And the truth is often these conservationists and environmentalists, we come from the so-called developed world, and our perspective on things is very, very different and is not necessarily always helpful for your sort of average jungle farmer. So our average jungle farmer has the tendency to sort of, you know, nod and smile, and they'll take whatever free thing you want to give them, of course. But the reality is when they go home, they're essentially going to ignore everything you've said because they've got real lives to live. So I'm going to talk really about kind of this idea of what is creation administration from this perspective here in this very particular context. I don't know how that sounds to you, creation administration as a term. I know that usually probably in the UK we talk about creation care or creation stewardship. That's probably, very common. Creation stewardship for me is probably the closest to the way I prefer to talk about this subject. But in fact, my real preference would be probably to call it something like creation management, because I think that comes closest to the balance of work and care that I think the Bible really talks about. And this is something, this balance between work and care is something that I really had to get my head around to be able to talk to our pastors and be able to talk to them in a way that means that they don't switch off after the first 5 minutes because they think I'm going to talk about something completely different. And the truth is they have every right to switch off after the first 5 minutes, because all of our pastors, you know, they are agriculturalists, they are farmers, they are fishermen, they cut trees. So they all know about this in a way that's far more practical than I do. So it has been a real challenge for me over the years to actually really try and understand what is their perspective. How can I understand creation stewardship or creation management? What does the Bible say, but from their point of view? Yeah, so let's say about 99% of the pastors that we work with, and when I say pastors, I guess I'm talking about lay pastors. They will not have had any formal training at all. But, you know, the vast majority of them, they either grew up living off the land or they're still living off the land. And the very common thing here is for people to have their chakras, their jungle farms, and they generally work with very little mechanization. Or no mechanization. They work with very little inputs in terms of chemical inputs, pesticides, herbicides, fertilizers, and basically it's all rain fed. There's very little irrigation. So farming here in this particular part of Peru is really a very kind of a very basic hands-on activity, let's say. And their key tool is the machete, of course. They go out with a machete. You can see kids walking around with machetes from a very early age. That is the key tool. And it is actually pretty impressive what your average sort of jungle farmer can do with a machete. So also the context is that very few of these pastors obviously have any support. They don't receive any support from their churches. So they're essentially doing the job around their day job, you might say, because everyone else in their community is just like them. Everyone is farming. Everyone is trying to just get enough to live on and to, if they can, send their children to school. So there really isn't any kind of economic support, financial support for the pastors. And you know, they don't have any insurance either. So if crops fail or if there are any problems, their insurance policy is basically having children. That is still, for a lot of our rural pastors, the idea that you have your six kids, because if anything goes wrong, you get sick, you know, your children can help you out. And that's really kind of the reality still for most of the pastors that we work with. So knowing that this is kind of how people live, how they're trying to do their lives. And that's basically something that few of us in the UK can really can say that we live in that way, that we're living directly off the land, we're living directly off of creation. So for me, it has been really important to get my head around how people live and to get my head around what does the Bible really say about it, so that we can have some meaningful input into this part of life, which is actually a massive part of life for people. And let's be honest, if we are honest, the Bible doesn't say a huge amount about it. It's not a priority in the Bible, and Jesus doesn't really talk about it at all. But there is good stuff in the Bible about it. And so we have obviously felt that, yes, we can sort of shed some biblical light on this really important topic. So I guess for me, in a way, the question is, after almost 9 years of trying to sort of walk with pastors and shed biblical light on this topic of how we live and how we manage these natural resources, God's creation, what have I learned in order to be able to help these pastors, or at least help them reflect on their walk? And that's what I'd like to share with you, really, this morning. And one of the first things I've appreciated very early on is that when I came from the UK and I was talking about creation care and trying to translate that, even creation stewardship, I very quickly realized that specifically in a way, creation care is just a non-starter. When you talk to people who go out every day with a machete and you have to kind of wrestle with creation to just get what they need, to talk to them about creation care is just one of those ways to get people to switch off really, really quickly, because it just doesn't relate to their everyday experience. And that actually really made me go back to the Bible, go back to those key texts and really try and read them again, but through the eyes of my brothers and sisters. What would stand out to them? What's meaningful for them? How would they interpret this idea of our responsibility towards creation? And I think I've come up with, over the years, kind of four particular points. And I'm going to kind of go through some of those this morning. And I guess the first one is that when we look at, let's say, creation version two, version one in chapter one, and the first thing that we can see is that God doesn't have any problem with apportioning rule or dominion over his creation. And in fact, when we look at it, human beings, we weren't even the first ones to be granted that kind of status. So first, God does some pretty earth-rending things himself, you know, to make the planet habitable. He separates the waters, he creates dry land. And then he puts the sun to rule the day and the moon to rule the night. And perhaps in the West, we have a tendency to try and sort of apologize for the terminology of sort of ruling and dominion. But actually, if we just look at what does that mean, what does it mean for the sun to rule the day, for example, we know that the sun basically drives the science of life on this planet. It can be deadly. The sun can be deadly. But it also, if it just winked out, we'd be in a pretty bad way as well. That beautiful Psalm 19, which I love, tells us that, you know, the heavens declare the glory of God and the sky above proclaims his handiwork, amongst many other beautiful things. So we know that the term rule doesn't actually have to imply tyranny. Of course it doesn't. You know, we all believe that God rules the universe, but we also believe that he's not a tyrant, right? So when God says about human beings in Genesis, we all know the passage, I'm sure, Genesis 1:26, when it says, "Let us make mankind in our image, after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." You know, we know that this is about establishing authority, not tyranny. And yes, I also think this is about establishing sort of, let's say, the hierarchy of access rights, as well as the hierarchy of responsibility. The two do come hand in hand. I think that's implied. So what does that mean here in the Peruvian Amazon? For us, when I'm talking to my students, as I say, when I'm talking to the pastors, you know, when they tell me about how they're cutting down trees, why? Because they use that to send their children to school and they use that to build a house. I'm obviously going to tell them, okay, that's great. Please carry on with cutting down the trees that you need. You have every right to do that. When they tell me, or when they offer me, when I visit, you know, some small furry animal they've shot, maybe it's a monkey. Oh, that's the worst thing. But I'm not going to say to them, oh, you can't shoot that. You know, it's a protected species. That isn't going to wash. You know, I have to say to them, okay, that's the protein you've got access to today. God bless you, yeah, and I'll join you in it if I have to. Likewise, when they're telling me, you know, so this month we're going to burn the chakra, the jungle farm, you know, I could, from my Western point of view, say, oh, but think of the carbon footprint. Obviously, I can't do that because I know what's the alternative for them if they're going to clear their chakra. They're going to do it by hand with a machete. That is the only option they have. So I know that actually, you know, we do have authority to manage creation. So yeah, okay, if they need to burn it, I'm gonna say, okay, you know, please do burn it. I might say, okay, if you're on a slight slope, as we are right here where I live, please don't burn it on a rainy day because you're gonna wash all your topsoil away. But I'm not gonna say don't burn it, because actually they have every right to burn it. You know, God has given us responsibility and authority to manage creation. But of course, what comes really hot on the heels of kind of that idea is what we see in creation chapter 2, creation version 2 in Genesis 2. And we see something for me, which is absolutely beautiful. It's how the earth was clearly made for mankind and mankind made for the earth. And we see that more so in the Hebrew. I'm not fluent in Hebrew, but I've read a concordance or two, and it's beautiful when you see, you know, Adam being the word for the mankind, and Adama being the word for the dust of the earth from which the human was made. So we have this wonderful sense of the earth being made for the human being made for the earth, and the wordplay sort of shows us that. And we've also got the wonderful explanation in Genesis 2, which I see where basically God says, or we're told that there was still no plant of the field that had grown, partly because there was no one to work the earth yet. So what did God do? Well, he made a human being, then he planted a garden, and he popped the human right there. Why? And this is where we come to that balance of work and care. Now, he put the human being in the garden to work it and to care for it. The two are balanced. And I think that's probably the most practical way of understanding it even today. We have to work creation, but we also have to care for it at the same time. And, you know, your average jungle farmer, they might not have had much formal education, but they've worked creation for their livelihood, you know, all of their life. So when you ask them, they're actually perfectly capable of understanding what happens when the working and the caring are not balanced, because they get those consequences in a very direct way. They know that, you know, when there's too much caring, so when I speak in conservationist terms, not all conservationists speak in the same way, but if I put the emphasis on conservation, on caring, perhaps, for some of these pastors, they know that that means that they're not going to get their livelihood, because they're not going to be allowed to cut trees, they're not going to be allowed to work the land, and it might even mean that they can't live where they've traditionally grown up, because that will now be a reserve and they might be essentially ejected from their sort of their family land. Whereas they also understand that when you put too much emphasis on just working creation and not thinking about the caring aspect, that also has a negative aspect. And a lot of them have seen it and are seeing it now. You know, when you work it too much, you overexploit your resource. And for these pastors, that means they, you know, them and their families, they can go hungry. It's that direct, the connection. So they themselves understand when you ask them, when you give them a chance to actually just sit and think about it. Wait a minute. Do we need to balance work with care? Does care need to be balanced with work? They get that. They understand it. They can understand it in a really practical, hands-on way. So we kind of get to the stage of kind of concluding that we know that mankind has authority to use creation, right, to work it for our benefit. But that working is very definitely supposed to be balanced with caring. And if we take the example of God in his rule, of the sun in its rule, we know that there's really no justification for a destructive exploitation in our dominion. Okay, so the third thing that once we've kind of started to digest in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, the third thing that I kind of get to see, which I kind of realize is a much bigger point to make than perhaps you'd otherwise think, is that for many cultures still, and many countries in the world, the idea of being a farmer doesn't have a lot of status attached to it. And so basically being a farmer is essentially, you know, being you're a creation manager, aren't you? You're directly working with God's resources right there every day. And even though this is actually, if we look at the Bible, and we've seen in, you know, Genesis 1 and 2, that this is kind of the reason God created human beings, yet even so, the job of being a farmer, certainly here, because I can't really talk very, very much about other countries, but here in this part of Peru and throughout the country, being a farmer is kind of like the thing you do when you can't do anything else. You know, it is not a high status job. And it's true that a lot of our pastors who are farmers, perhaps they do it because they can't do anything else. They probably didn't finish secondary school. They didn't get any further studies, but they grew up on the land. So they learned from their parents what to do. So at the very least, they've got their land and they can work it. But they're really not seen as, you know, professional, responsible people who are doing a valuable job. And I think over the years of spending time with these pastors and just church members as well out in the villages, I can see how for them, they just don't feel like they're worth very much. And they don't feel that the work they do is worth very much. And I've seen the necessity really to to bring this message forward, that this is part of the good news for them, specifically in this context, that the Bible very clearly says right at the start of our scriptures, it says, now human beings were created to do this job. We weren't created to be pop stars. We weren't created to be politicians or astronauts. Nothing wrong with those things. But in the first place, you know, people were created by God. Humans were created by God and commissioned to manage creation. So the fact that my dear brothers and sisters who really don't feel their worth very much are there every day managing creation, I think it's been a really important part of this teaching to just encourage them and say, look, this is a really important job you're doing. The Bible says it. Look, it's really clear here that actually doing agriculture is one of the most important professions on the planet, and it should get a lot more respect, a lot more kudos than it does. It also is an incredibly responsible profession, and that comes together, I think, when you realize that what you do is important, you're generally going to be a bit more responsible about it. So that's one of the key messages, I think, that I never really thought about before I came here, but that I've realized over the years, and that this is a part of the message of creation care for my brothers and sisters here. They really need to be told how valuable their work is, and how valuable they are, that as pastors, as well as agriculturalists, who every day are managing God's creation from, because they don't just do farming, you know, they fish, they cut trees, they hunt, they cut palm leaves, they make charcoal, they make medicinal plant medicines. They know creation in a way that, you know, let's face it, most of us in the West probably will never have need to. And for me to be able to say to them, look, this is really important what you do. God highly values this work you do. Look what it says right at the beginning of the scripture. It's been really, I can see it's been really encouraging to a lot of our pastors, and it helps them start to think a bit further about what they do. Should I take a break there, or I can carry on? I was going to do it for 10 to 15 minutes.
Well, that's great, Laura. We'll come, perhaps you can come back in a moment and just talk about the practical application side of things, because that's been so helpful. And, you know, we've realized in this COVID, so many people have realized, again, the benefit of gardening, the benefit of getting their fingers dirty. And we've had reports and writings about this, in the newspapers, on the news here in this country, benefit that people have found during lockdown of actually being in the garden. And I was just struck by what you said, that God has called us. No wonder, because God has called us to engage in these things. And one of our members, Will, I interviewed him in the summer at his allotment, and he expressed it that same way. I asked him why the allotment meant so much to him. He said, well, because it feels like this is what I was made for. Mm. So that's really, really terrific. And I love the idea that your teaching is raising these people's esteem about what they're doing. They can take pride in it, in their work, and managing the creation, God's creation, for their benefit, for the benefit of the community. Yeah. It's been so helpful, Laura. I've never heard it come from that angle before, that idea of that work and care. That's a wonderful balance. So really appreciate that. Perhaps you could just go on now to, you were going to talk about some of the practical application of that. Is that all right for you just to go for it now? Thank you.
Yeah, no, that's fine. So I'm going to go on and talk about, as we go through the teaching, how is it that we get people to think about, okay, well, what do we change, or what do we put into practice? Because we also need to get to the point of realizing, you know, after we've had the nice chat about how we have dominion and how we have authority and we have to work and to balance that with care, we also have to get to Genesis 3, which is also, you know, a message that really resonates with people that work every day on the land and who have no insurance, who really depend on it for their everyday existence. Because what does Genesis 3 talk about? It talks about basically when everything goes wrong. And yeah, this resonates so deeply with so many of our pastors. We know that the earth is made for mankind and that mankind is made for the earth, but we also see that the earth is cursed because of man's disobedience. And so we have to admit that what should have been a type of work that was a blessing to us actually now becomes essentially backbreaking labor. It's a real struggle, that essentially ends in death. I think any one of us who's ever done any manual labor, whether it's in the tropics or otherwise, but certainly in the tropics, if you've done any manual labor in the tropics, that verse 19 of chapter 3 will really resonate with you again, where it says, "By the sweat of your face shall you eat bread." I've experienced that quite a lot, and I'm not even that hard a worker. So as I said before, as we can all imagine, you know, the work of your average farmer who's really armed with a machete, and if he's lucky, he might have a chainsaw for cutting down the trees. It's seriously hard work. Lest we have a really idealized view about how we can even hope that our brothers and sisters here can become these sort of wonderful, priest agriculturalists working in perfect harmony with their environment, we have to recognize that there is stuff that's gone seriously wrong in our creation that makes our work very, very difficult. It's not necessarily true or realistic that we can go back to sort of a pre-fall state of having that beautiful relationship of that balance with our creation. So I suppose reflecting on that, you know, in the West, we've tried to counteract all the sweating, if I don't say all the sweating, with mechanization and sort of industrialization of food production and, you know, monocultures, all of that. You guys know all about that already. Perhaps that has meant we sweat a lot less in our working of creation, except that now I think we're probably all sweating because of the damage that is being caused or has been caused, not only to creation, but even to our own bodies with the sorts of food that we're now eating. So thinking about that, obviously one of the things that when we come to talk about practical application with our pastors, we're not about to tell them to, you know, clear fell swathes of jungle and start a beef cattle market or plant oil palm. Obviously that's not something we're gonna try and encourage them to do, but I'm gonna be honest, I as a foreigner try not to tell them what they need to do at all, because that's generally not helpful either, because we're trying to lift them up as farmers and creation managers in their own right. So what is it that we do? How do we help them try and put into practice what they're starting to appreciate, perhaps from that biblical perspective? And what we tend to do, I'll just take you through the steps of what we do, is, you know, after doing the sort of study of Genesis 1 to 3, we talk about work ethic. And we look at the different scriptures on work ethic, because once you realize that your job is important, you have to know, therefore, okay, well, how should I be working? So there's great scriptures in the Old Testament, which are absolutely perfect because you hardly need to contextualize them at all for our pastors. Proverbs is full of wonderful stuff that you really don't, there's no need to modernize it because our pastors are experiencing it just like that. They know what the ants do. They know what it means to bring in your harvest manually and put it in your little storehouse. So it's wonderful to be able to just go through some of those scriptures on work ethic. And obviously, New Testament has some important stuff about maintaining your family and working hard, not being dependent on people. So we talk about work ethic, which is also a really big deal for our pastors, because I kind of alluded to it before, they feel bad, right? They feel bad about not being sort of professional pastors or not having had any theological training. And for them, there's this sense that they're obliged to work in the chakra, in the farm. They're obliged to do that to meet material needs. But the work that God really wants them to be doing is when they get to the little chapel in the evening. That's where their kind of their spiritual life and their spiritual service kicks in. But everything else is just kind of outside of that and what they're obliged to do. So when we talk about the importance of their work and work ethic, we're showing them, no, don't worry. You know, we know you have to work to earn a living and to maintain your family. God sees that and he values that. That is an important part of your ministry. And therefore, we should do that with the diligence that the Bible teaches us that we should. Because obviously that's the case for all of us. We spend a fraction of our life actually in the church, even if you're a pastor, right? And most of the time you're outside doing the other bits of life. So it's not even just true for Peruvian pastors. It's true for all of us. But we definitely here have a sense of, you know, categorizing our time and what is service and what isn't. So that's one of the reasons we just try and get them to think, wait a minute, okay, this is part of my service to God. This is also of value to God and the work that I do on the chakra or in the chakra. And then the next thing we get them to do is actually just spend a bit of time thinking about the future, thinking about their family, their kids. They're all generally, yeah, 9 out of 10 of them have got half a dozen kids or so. So they're all parents. They're all thinking about their kids. What do they want for their children? What do they want for their future? So what might they need to be doing now to invest in that future? And again, this might seem like, oh, this is obvious, isn't it? You know, you wouldn't need to go to a theological training course for this. But for most of our pastors, this is something that they'll very rarely do in their normal life. They won't take the time to think about the future. And culturally, forward planning isn't as big a deal here as it is in the UK. What is probably more important for them than forward planning is being an opportunist. They're great opportunists. So they see something and they know how to grab it. but in terms of planning, so that, you know, they might not necessarily have to just grab the thing. That's often people will consider that being a bit arrogant if you think you can plan more than a year ahead. If you start thinking that you want something better in your life and you're going to plan for it, there's a certain aspect of that that people find quite, they think it's a bit egocentric. They think it's a bit, oof, who are you to think that you can achieve something better? So we really want to kind of try and come against that by saying, no, planning for the future, being a good parent, think about your kids. This is a good thing. And the Bible also says, you know, parents need to be a blessing to their children. It's not just children being a blessing to their parents. So whilst this seems like, you know, what has this got to do with creation care? But when you start to think about it, wait a minute, it is creation management. Why? Because if they do want to invest in the future, what resources do they have with which to invest in the future? It's creation. It's they're going to plant trees or, well, again, get to that in a minute. It is those resources that they have to hand. So although that doesn't seem like a creation management topic, it really is for our guys. And as you give them time and just kind of prod them to think about some of these things and write things down, they themselves start to realize that, okay, on the one hand, they're very vulnerable people. You know, a storm comes through, flooding comes through, destroys their crop, they're very vulnerable. But on the other hand, because they have that direct connection to creation, they can plan, they can manage, and they have every right to, they have every authority given by God to think and manage and plan what they want to do and when it comes to, you know, God's creation. And it isn't long before they themselves are saying, well, you know what I could do? I could be planting more mahogany, or I could be planting, cedar, they call it cedro, you know, because that will mature just about the time that my kid need to go to university. If I want them to go to university, you know, that gets them thinking, oh, you know, there is stuff I can do. And they themselves are coming up with the practical application of being a good creation manager. So they'll talk about reforestation. They'll come up with the idea of, well, actually, if the fish stocks in our rivers are going down, okay, I can build a fish farm, or I can raise pigs so I don't have to shoot so many monkeys. They'll come up with the solutions themselves. They'll even start coming up with the idea that, okay, as a church, we can get together and do a project. We can, one of our pastors, he managed to do that with his church. They actually built a fish farm as a church project. And they'll offer to, you know, between them, between the different villages, they'll say, well, I'll come and help you to do your project, and then you can come and help me. And all of a sudden they're working together and they're thinking about the future and they are managing their resources. We use the word sustainability, but they're just thinking about, okay, my kids, this will be a good investment for my children. And this will be a good investment for me and my family. Maybe even for their own pension, you know, they won't get a pension here. But if they've got a fish farm or they've planted how many hectares with some good tropical hardwoods, they might just, you know, this is the investment they'll get to haul in when they need it. So they themselves start coming up with a practical application of all of this thinking. And for me, once we get to that point, it's like, okay, that's brilliant. You know, biblical light has now been shared on this topic. They themselves are seeing what the solutions are and how they can improve what they're doing. And they themselves start to realize, oh yeah, no, this is a theological topic. This is appropriate to our lives and our ministries. And then, you know, that's kind of the end of that first session that I teach on that. And then for the rest of the kind of, it's kind of like 2 years, and we have 10 more sessions. And during those sessions, we then start to just focus in on different things. So then we focus in on water and hygiene. Then we focus in on nutrition, medicinal plant use. And, you know, if one of the pastors or a bunch of the pastors say, I'm really interested in how to grow chocolate. Okay, we get in an expert from the local sort of research institute who can give them a specific talk on how to do chocolate trees. And so we pull in the relevant experts. You can give them proper practical teaching on those specific things. And we kind of tailor the course to the students that come. And that's kind of how we do it. And I think that's how we've seen it. We can make that topic as appropriate, as contextualized, and as practical as possible. And we've seen pastors really be excited by the idea that, you know, we don't expect them just to be in the church 24/7, but actually we want to encourage them in their work to do good work and to help them, facilitate them in that as well. And we've seen that to be a really positive approach for them when we talk about creation stewardship. So that's kind of what we do and how we do it.
It's fabulous. Even in this country, we've sort of we've compartmentalized what we term as spiritual and what we term as life. And we talk about our spiritual lives, or we talk about our work life. And I remember a friend of mine said, I don't have a spiritual life, I just have a life. That's really good. And it's been so wonderful to hear what you're doing. You're really bringing change to people's lives, and not just to the people, the farmers themselves, but to their families, and I'm sure to their communities. And I love it that the Bible is so practical.
Amen.
It's so wonderful, isn't it? It's God's word. But it makes a difference to life. Amen. And what you've been doing, Laura, is helping those dear people understand that they are valued by God, that their work is valued by God, and so on, and He values their work. So that's really, really terrific. There's so much we could talk about. It's just not time, but. But thank you for that. We're going to, and we appreciate it, because as I say, you are the face of BMS for us, and we really appreciate that. We're going to, somebody asked me about how we support you, and I'll explain it to everybody now, that we support BMS, we support what they do, and we do that every year. But we also do it at harvest time. We particularly we encourage people to give an additional gift to BMS. And we hope that some way down the line that people like Laura, who are on the front line doing the stuff, are understanding our support and benefiting from it. We really value the fact that we can be partners with you in what you're doing in Peru.